Listen to this.
Zakamani, the flying winger.
Here's Brad Evans.
It's Steve.
Who is it? It's Brad Evans.
It's not again.
Happy days are here again. Turning with a drive, it's Steve Zakamani. Evans with the left foot. He's an attacking threat, Brad Evans.
This is so weird.
The party has started.
And I'm delighted to say that we're joined by the one and only head coach of the Seattle Sounders, friend of the podcast, Brian Schmetzer. And this is the perfect time, really, because we're just recapping the entire season. It's our last episode of 2023. Schmetzer and I spoke briefly yesterday, but we're going to get probably a little bit deeper today with everything. And Brad
tactics
as well. Yeah, everything.
And tactics and everything.
I gave you my opinion yesterday, and I want to kind of start there. I think Brad, Kleena, are on the same page that the season was a success. And I say that in this sense, Schmetz. I've seen giant teams miss the playoffs and then they're gone for a long time. Yeah. You know, Toronto was been in three MLS Cups in the last 5-6 years and then they won 4 games last year. The Galaxy, when I was playing, they were the powerhouse, then they were gone for 4 or 5 years. Yes.
Portland.
Yeah, them too.
I'm good today.
We missed the playoffs last year. And not only did we bounce back, we didn't squeeze in on the last day. We weren't waiting for favors. Came back in as a second seed, which was secured with a commanding victory in St. Louis. And one of the best defensive seasons on record of all time for the team and the league in general. So by all metrics, it's a success. But in sports, it's as if you don't win it all, you failed. How do you feel about all of this?
Well, how does Brad feel about this?
Well, we talked all season. Look, and on, I don't know if you actually listen to the podcast, mm-hmm. but we...
Sorry.
We are... No, it's fine. Like, we are very honest and even keel about the whole thing. So if the team doesn't play well, then we talk about why the team doesn't play well. If we're in a rut and we haven't won 5-6 games, why are we in that rut? And this was that tempo of a season. And we've talked about it so much, all of us, that... Every year that either we've played or we've covered the Sounders is every year it's either it has its ebbs and flows. Yeah. Very rarely do you have a season
build.
Where it's just steady build. No, it's never really happened. I mean, 2014 you win a supporter shield, but even then, you know, it was kind of like, okay, are we going to do it? Are we not going
to
do it? Right.
On the fluke goal that came off Leo Gonzalez's shin or something or whatever,
right?
Or he should have stuck his leg out.
Yes. And so, and you look at this season, and this was one where we start hot and Jordan's on fire. And then, you know, we kind of have a little bit of a lull in the summer and then we, you know, turn it into high gear. So I saw it at the end of the day as a success, but we were honestly sitting here at the midpoint of the season asking questions. Is this team going to make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Are guys going to get healthy? And, you know, as we started to get results, it was like, okay, we're back on track. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, overall as a whole, I think it was a season, especially, and we'll talk about the challenges, but it was a success.
Okay, so there's one vote for success. There's another vote. Keely? Yeah.
I'm a glass half full person all the time. It was a success.
Yeah. Okay.
Success.
So I'll just make it 4-for-4.
Yeah.
I'll make it 4-for-4 and say yes in many ways. In many ways, this season was a success. And I'll get into the details now and you guys can ask questions along the way or stop me if I talk too long.
No.
Success because we were able to compete in a tournament that no other MLS team has been able to do. And the result didn't go our way, of course, but just competing in that tournament and the build up to that tournament was a big deal. The players felt it, you know. I said yesterday, you know, the coaching in that moment, the coaching of last preseason was easy because guys were super laser focused because they had that game, one game, and then you're playing against Real Madrid. So that was good. It was a success in the fact that we changed totally the way we played.
Yeah.
I mean, front to back, we added a little more discipline. We added a little more tactical shape than I was used to. So I had to come out of my comfort zone. Mm. I mean, Freddie Preki and Andy were the ones that were saying, look, you know, we reviewed why we didn't make the playoffs in 2022. We reviewed that extensively. We looked at the roster that we were given. JP coming back, but knew who, you know, Yaimar, the same cast of characters. We didn't really know what we had with Chu early on. That was kind of a wild card for us, but that was going to be Jordan and Raul up top.
Yep.
How did Nico fit in? Yeah. You know, the young kids pressing, you know, Albert's place. But the new tactics worked.
Yeah.
I would say that the way we played, I thought, was entertaining in a lot of moments.
Yeah.
Certainly, we have to fine-tune the goal-scoring portion of it.
Possession-based, like you always want to have the ball.
We ended up second in the league in possession behind who?
Columbus.
Yeah.
And I never thought of us really as a truly possession-based team because we're so good in those little transition moments. But we were actually a really good possession team. Yeah. So, yeah, we had success because we were in this gigantic tournament. We had success because the way we played worked for most players. Mm-hmm. During the challenging parts of the year, and I always say this, you know, it's easy to be a man, apologize, a good person, you know, when, you know, you're making money, you're playing soccer, got a nice car, you got a nice partner, you live in a nice house, you live in a nice city, everything's going, it's easy to be a good human being. When the adversity comes, when there's this bag of poo above your head and it's going to drop and it's going to, you know, interrupt all of the good things that you have, and you got to fight and figure out a way how to be successful, that's when people of real character show up. And I think the steadiness and the commitment of the coaching staff to the way we played, I think the pride in the players themselves, the return of Christian. And then, you know, in the final outcome, you know, making a tough decision on who kind of the starting group looked like, ended up with us coming in second place. That game in St. Louis was a side note. That was one of our better performances. I thought we smashed them. Yeah. And they were in first place at time. Good home record. We went. I had no fear sitting on the bench that game that we were going to win that game. So, yes, in many ways a success. But
it has to be. I mean,
how long will 2022 stay in your memory?
You mean the playoff miss or the glass half full Keeley Champions League?
The playoff miss.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah. Long after you're gone, you'll think about that one.
Yeah. You know
right?
why? You know why, Brad? Because look, in 2018, you know, and 2018, you're still around. You knew the team, everything. We had a really good team. And Portland beat us by fluke in that playoff game. But if Chad hadn't gotten injured and Christian hadn't got thrown over by whoever on the end line and he injured his adductor, that 2018 team, we would have gone to MLS Cup, gone to Atlanta, and given them a game.
Right.
Because you guys were a good team.
Yeah.
That's what I believe, and that's how far I go back.
And Ziggy always said, like, he hated losing more than he liked winning. And when you look back on your career, I think for all of us, it's hard to reflect. It's easy to reflect on good things that happen, but the things that always stick out are those near misses. And those are the ones that I remember the most were those, you know, years. 2013 sticks out, right? That playoff series for us getting knocked out in you know, against Portland. You know, just some of those near misses that And that one will always
in Dallas when Chad
scores
the
and then yeah 2015
header,
yeah
and then Dean he Dallas. Runs back to the runs back to midfield when he should have just fallen
over, taking a yellow card in the corner and it's just like these little moments that always stick out that you remember, and I feel like you're also that way where it's like I celebrate the victories, but also it's what do I have to do to get better and to get this team better and back into the playoffs. And I think to Steve's point, like, that's such a testament to turn around the team even with some adversity that I'm sure we'll ask about. But that 2022 season, was that the catalyst to say, okay, we're going to run things a little bit differently this year?
We had to.
Right.
I'll give you guys some insight. So it wasn't just the tactics. Look, I think I've been pretty honest on record about complacency.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes that's human nature. You go and you win something like Champions League. No other team's done it. There's going to be that human nature drop where, you know, you got to pick yourself up again. Yeah, we're too good of a team not to make the playoffs. Yes, we know better. Yes, we message it to the team, but it's internal. Mm-hmm. And I looked at myself, too. And I said, did I become complacent? Mm-hmm. Was I too lax? Because you guys know me well enough. I'm a pretty easygoing coach. Mm-hmm. Never not need the discipline, some of those things. I let the senior players kind of do what they do. Yeah, young players, I can be hard on them. But, you know, you guys know what it's like to be in that locker room. It was a tight locker room, good locker room still. There's not any glaring issues. But it's my job not to be complacent. And I think over the course of time, we had a lot of success. And so what we did at the beginning of this year was not only change the formation, but we also changed some of the rules inside of our group. And I think those made a big impact on the entire
accountability.
Yeah, accountability. And look, it became a little bit of a, you know, kind of a laugh and a giggle sometimes when we had our fine wheel.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because it actually did the job, because people didn't show up late for the gym anymore. When people were supposed to be there at 9 o'clock for their activation or their, you know, assessments with the training staff, they were there at 9 o'clock, and it just worked better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was a little more firm in some of those areas than maybe I had been in years past. Yeah. And,
you know, but I think that's what we want sometimes, though. Absolutely. As players, yeah, you want that, you know, discipline. And I think we both coach young kids now, and you've mm-hmm. coached younger ones also, is the high schoolers. Like they crave discipline, because they don't get it really in the classroom. Like, you can be on your phone, you can be, you know, this, that, and the other, and then you get out to practice, and it's like, no, you can't get away with that here.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to hear you say that, and I don't know if there's cultural things, or, you know, maybe it's just me, maybe it's an age thing. Because when I was growing up playing, I mean, we did pretty much what we wanted to do, mm-hmm. but we knew we had to do the job on the field. We didn't necessarily crave or want the structure, because we knew at the end of the day, this referee blows a whistle, this is what we have to do. We knew our jobs. And I'm not saying that young players don't have that now. And I'm not saying that discipline is wrong, but I always feel like Roman needed to be Roman, mm-hmm. and you and Chad needed to be mm-hmm. the two of you. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I let Nico and those guys, I mean, they walk out
right
at the end, and, you know, stuff like that. It's just culturally, I think there's a part of me that says, let people be who they are, because I think that's important. But I tweaked it. Mm-hmm. I just gave you guys a little bit more than maybe what I had in the past. And I think the players noticed the change.
Yeah.
So we spoke about one of the changes being tactically. I want to get in on that. Defensively, I mean, lights out. I mean, we had Stephen Fry yesterday. Steph, I think, broke his own clean sheet record from 6 years ago. So he's stayed consistent. Nuhu, again, had one of the best seasons that he's had. Maybe his best season. He kind of refined his game. Jackson, breakout star. Yamar, you know, was he best 11? Should have been.
No.
Should have been.
No.
He wasn't, but should have been.
Should have been. And Alex Rodon, so defensively, you were very good. Did the way you tweak, did that affect your offensive output in any way? Or do you think, was it just a case of Raul didn't play enough games, Jordan was hot and cold? Was it more to do with just performances? Or because you emphasized so much on being defensively balanced, did you take away from your tactics?
You know, Steve, that's a good question. I don't know if I'll be able to answer that now. I'll actually reflect on that. Nobody's asked me that. Mm-hmm. The easy answer I would tell you is that I think it was personnel-based.
Yeah.
Because, look, let's be honest. At the end of the day, we had our two DPs coming off the bench in critical games.
Yeah.
And in our league, the salary cap, the way it's structured, you can't have that.
Yeah.
You can't have that, right? But was our tactics a little bit of the reasons? I mean, that maybe could have been a little bit of it. Maybe it was the unbalanced still of the left and the right, because, look, Liu Chu had statistically a great year. He's a super talented kid, but I think he's got more.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got way more.
100%.
And he needed, in the playoff games, because he didn't have the best playoff series, right?
We mm-hmm. thought you might bench him.
Yeah, well, we talked about
it. Yeah, okay. We thought that was a change.
So I was close.
I was
really close.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kid's super talented. He gives you this. But you know, the balance within the team, I think maybe could have been, and maybe that's not tactical what you're asking me. Mm. Maybe that's, again, personnel based. Yeah. Interesting question.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was curious because I've known your teams. I've watched your teams. Okay, I worked with you as my system coach, and you would not let me leave the pitch until we did some crossing and finishing. You spent time with myself and Eddie Johnson or whoever Oba was there. You worked on the attacking side. Then you become the head coach, and you guys were free-flowing the days of Brad Smith and Victor on the left, and you've always tweaked things attacking-wise. This is the most I've seen you really lock in and say, we're going to be so hard to beat, that I was curious, did that pull the team back a bit? But I'm going to answer my own question and think it probably was more to do with personnel. I think Raul played 12, 13 games. Nico wasn't quite himself. I think it's more to do with that. I think so.
You know, let's bring Nico up into the equation because, yeah, look, he has been such a tremendous player for our club and such an important player for our club.
Yeah.
And he's the one guy that the system didn't really fit. And I felt bad. I still feel bad. Because I don't know if it was me or just maybe he stays, you know, who knows? And you can always second guess yourself. But having him in a little bit more defined role is not Nico Ladero. Nico Ladero needs to be himself. Yeah. And so I think he suffered a little bit, and I think the team suffered a little bit because of that. So that's the one tactical change that maybe caused us some hardship.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, it was so good defensively. I think in years past, it's been Alex, go, 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 go. And I don't think this year was his best statistical year for the Sounders. But defensively, at the end of the day, you're a defender.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an outside back, I think in this system, he needs to get into the attack more. But he also needs a target in the box that he can, you know, swing the ball, because he's such a good server of the ball. You know, but I think that he could, you know, provide more. So I think it was a little bit performance also and personnel for me versus tactics, because we've seen a 4-2-3-1 produce in the past. I mean, you know, you've seen it with the Sounders team.
So I'll elaborate on that a little bit, diving into the tactics. So on the right hand side, you've got Alex, who was in our system supposed to be the highest, widest guy on the field. Christian in the pocket to begin with. They had flexibility to change. Christian was the one that always seemed to get in the prime assist zone. But we talked about a central crossing zone, which is when the ball gets to the prime assist zone and there's nothing there and you got to recirculate it, serving the ball from just outside the corner of the 18-yard box is where Alex's strengths would be great. I still remember the one goal, I don't remember what game it was, where he crossed the ball over and Jordan smashed it in. It was one of the early games, against RSL.
Yeah.
We didn't do that enough,
that's
Brad.
The ball. Because it turns around all the defenders, and that's what you don't want as a defender.
Because as the ball goes negative, the defense is stepping out, then the forwards have their ability to go forward, unless they're lazy and they're offside, of course. Yeah. But I don't think we relied on that enough, and that was one of the talking points towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. What's next? Mm-hmm. What is the next evolution of the prime assist zone? That's the one blessing or curse that Ravi Ravamani still left us.
Was it in some ways the most challenging year you've had as the head coach? In some ways. And I say that from the pressure coming into it, of course, you know, let's not make it 2 years in a row missing the playoffs. Uncharted territory going to the Club World Cup. And then as the season goes on, I mentioned yesterday in our chat, I don't know if you ever had your full 11 until the very end where you could leave guys out. The team sort of picked itself. Raul will be in and out. Then Jordan's in and out. Christian missed significant time. So you never quite had a run of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games. So in some ways, was it your most challenging year? And then you have the two biggest players on the bench in the biggest games of the season.
I think that decision was a challenging decision because, look, it could have gone the wrong way.
Yeah.
We could have not made the playoffs, and you're not playing your two highest paid guys, and then you would have been murdered in the press.
Yeah, 100%.
So that was challenging. That was tough. And, you know, when I reflect on it, you know, did I do it early enough? Could I have waited? Could I have kept Nico in for Leo? You know, I'm still in that reflective phase. I don't know if I have a true answer for that yet. I thought the starting group that we played in the playoffs had a shot. We were close. We were, you know, this close from beating LAFC. Oh, yeah. So I think I made the right decision.
Yeah.
Most challenging years, Steve, my memory fails me a little bit. I think there's been, like you pointed out earlier, there's always ebbs and flows in each season. But I'm not so sure that the expectations were as critical because it was the first time we missed the playoffs. So that was the dark cloud looming over our heads. You said it earlier in this interview, you know, midway through the year, people were saying, well, are the Sounders going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a big question, yeah.
That conversation took place in the coaches' room.
Okay.
I'm telling you that right now. We're like going, oh.
We call this it, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, blankety blank. Yeah. Yes. And so to answer your question, Brad, in many ways, yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was. It was hard.
It's the ebbs and flows, and I want to ask you about the youngsters. I think this was the first I've seen in quite some time where the young guys have really stepped in and made a big impact. Yeah. And you're actually now talking about, and we talk about a lot about the ceiling of, you know, 3-4 of these guys. Especially, you know, you talk about Atencio, Obed, Reed, and Jackson. And kind of where they're headed, what
and
direction you think.
I'd throw Leo in there, too. I'd throw Chew in there.
Yeah, I'm specifically talking about, like, young, from the club that you've probably seen since they were 15 years old and that have been in the system quite a bit. Those four guys specifically, that where is their ceiling and where is their place within this team moving forward?
That's not a beer. That's not a Rainier. That's not a Rainier.
Sponsored by
Keeley. It's a sparkling water.
Steve, pass me one of those. We don't have our sponsor just yet. That's for next year.
We're working on it.
We're working on it.
And you will hear some cracked during podcasts. Yeah.
So we made some really big strides this year with our young kids. Brad, I'm glad you brought that up because I love talking about it. And look, there was some rub early on in my coaching career that Schmetz is never going to play the young guys. He's never going to play the young guys. Well, the roster was made up of a bunch of senior guys that were better. So I played the guys that are going to help win games. Yeah. That's always been my guiding light. You play the players. I don't care about where they come from, how old they are, what they look like, how tall, skinny, you know, fast, slow. You play the guys that you think are going to help you win games. And look, we signed Danny Leyva and Ethan and Alfonso Campo Chavez and some other guys along the way, and they're all talented players. Henry Wingo, they're all talented players. But were they good enough to play on what I felt was a top team in our league? And my answer to that question was always, well, no, I don't see it. Now, they could possibly get there. We never closed the door on any of those players. I mean, at the end of the day, the player is responsible for his own career, right? But now what we have is we have players who are not only helping us win games, Brad, but part of the whole Nico Albert discussion and who's going to be our number 10 came down to Obed and Josh Atencio.
Yeah.
Because they were the ones that pushed Albert up a line.
Right.
Because those two guys were better next to JP. And Albert helped us win Champions League.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so you've got those two young kids that have a bright future. I mean, Obed's even a couple years younger than Josh. Josh will, you know, be getting into some camps, and, you know, Obed's already been there. Jackson as well. We're hoping that he gets into the January camp. He's got a bright future. Reed?
Yeah.
I mean, who would have picked Reed 2 years ago when we signed him?
Right. Unbelievable.
That he would be kind of like this beast of a player who dribbles around guys, crosses the ball to Alex to score goals, and, you know, is winning his duels. Megan, strength coach, she's turning these young boys.
That was going to be my next point.
She's turning them into men.
What you said it's 2 years ago, you look at their stature, and now you look at them and you cannot discern if they're 28, 29, or they're 18,
strong.
19, 20.
They are strong, good athletes. They're into the sport. They take their career seriously. They're students of the game. It's just different. We have this group of kids that again, I know you wanted to keep Brad Chu out of it, but we've got five kids that are legitimate MLS All-Stars.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Will Reed is left back his best position.
Well, he likes it.
He likes it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's, I mean, he can use both feet. And at what point do you see him really push for that role?
So look, my substitution patterns, and Nuhu, if you're listening to this, listen hard. My substitution pattern was, because Reed's a little bit better in the attacking third, you know, you could put Reed out there at left back, and if you're losing, you're down by a goal, you know, and then what that did, because there was those couple of games where Nuhu came back and I started Reed and he did good. All of a sudden, Nuhu started picking things up.
And then
Nuhu had the monster game against Dallas where he got the assist.
Wow. Yeah.
So that was good competition. What I would say about Reed is he could play left back, he could play right back. You know, he's versatile enough to play both sides. I still think he can even play in the pocket. I think the kid is really versatile. But he's a tall, strong young man, and his future is going to be somewhere. But he's already pushing.
Yeah.
He's already pushing for playing time.
Do you see, I'm curious as a coach, do you see a kid like that and you think, I know that you can be a really good player and you still need games. Do you ever get caught in a thought process of like, but I think your ceiling is too high for here. And I think that you could go to Europe, and I think that you could, you know, potentially push yourself, especially as a young player, and really a team might take a chance on him. And then if it doesn't work out, you can come back and be a player for the Sounders. Or are you hoarding these young kids to say, I need you. I need you here because I see the next 2-3 years of my coaching career, and you are a massive piece to that.
Another really fundamentally interesting question for the club, because my personal answer is no, I'm going to hoard them and do the best I can to develop them. And maybe it's because there was a snippets of rumors that Reed had some interest from some Bundesliga scouts because his profile, his physical profile fits the Bundesliga. I get it. But then there were the same people that were talking about Obed Vargas maybe playing, you know, in Spain or somewhere. He speaks Spanish and, you know, all of that. What I would tell you is that until the club really becomes active in, you know, player sales and transfers like Philadelphia, like other teams around the league, Dallas, of course, has led the way. Until we get there, we're going to hoard the players. Now, there are some things that will come out later this year about some loans for some of our players. I think we're looking into it because, look, this is a business.
Yeah.
This is a business, and DeAndre was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a good deal for us.
Yeah.
But that should happen a little bit more with the quality of players that we're producing from this area for the club.
I'm going to ask you, Brad, you can chime in too because you played with him. I want to talk about Jordan for a little bit. Came out of the gates flying. I think he got over half his goals in the first 2 months of the season, was scoring headers, looked fit, playing as a forward, had some time on the wing as well. Where can he still improve is the question I have, because when I, and I'm not to knock Jordan, when I look at the top teams in this league, you know, Cucho from the Crew, double-digit goals, double-digit assists. Boanga doesn't touch the ball for 89 minutes. The 1 minute he gets, back of the net. Like, you still have, that's, MLS is still so much parity, but I think the teams that are excellent, they have that guy that can make that difference a little bit. And Jordan for sure can. I'm wondering where he can still improve his game because you see him every day. And then, Brad, you played with him as well. Mm-hmm. Is he the kind of player that strikes you as in he spending this offseason saying, I'm going to work on my game? Because he told me last offseason he wanted to improve his heading. And he came in and was scoring headers for fun. So maybe he does have that. But I'm curious where he can still grow.
Sure. The easy answer there is, look, he's a nice kid. And, you know, he's got a nice life. Yeah. And he's got a nice young baby boy. And, you know, sometimes he's too nice.
Yeah.
I get it. That's the easy answer. The more nuanced answer would be this. Where he's made strides has been in his heading ability. Mm-hmm. You saw that. In his defending. Mm-hmm. His defending from the very front was really good at the back half of the season. I mean, he was pressing. He's so strong, fast, powerful. I thought that was really good. Actually, when I had a conversation with Berhalter the other day, he noticed it. He's like, man, what would you guys do with Jordan? You know, Jordan's defending from the front, was really putting pressure on opponents. And so he's done some, he's made some strides. But if he wants to play as a number nine, he's got to just understand his movement inside the box has to be constant. His vision has to be constant to find the half a space, the body position. So when he gets the ball, he can shoot on goal. Some of those little nuances that the Raul's, the Cucho, you know, whatever. If he plays out on the wing, you know, one of our pet peeves has always been, you know, you see him go down to his left and he then cries across the ball with the outside of his right, or, you know, he just hits a hopeful ball across with his left foot. He needs to have that move like Bawanga to the inside. He needs that.
It's a good shot. I would have said that.
Yeah, I just think the two things with Jordan, if he's going to be the number nine, he wants to come in here and score 20 goals, that it has to be his hold-up play and getting others involved in the play, because it doesn't always have to be him turning and sprinting into space. Yeah, when that's on, it's on, but there's also another dynamic to being a number nine where you just simply hold up the play. I mean, Giroux's really good at it, right? He can get in the box, and he can get, he's really good in the air, but also his ability to just hold off a defender and wait for the play to develop. Because I often think when I watch Jordan and the way that we break out is really fast, because we know that we have Chu, we have Roldan, who is actually faster than he looks, and we also have Jordan, who wants to spin and go every time. But allowing the play and the other players to join the attack with him just holding on to the ball a little bit and holding off a defender and then letting the play develop a little bit more.
In the early part of the season, that's what Abel was giving us. His holding play was exceptional.
Right. And that dropping into pockets, it helps develop the play a little bit. And then, I think at the end of the day, it's about finishing. And can you be dynamic in the way that you finish and not just rely on one method to put the ball in the back of the net? But, I mean, he can. He if he is given service and the players around him, I think he can have 15 goals in a season if he stays healthy. Mm-hmm. And we're still talking about a guy who did take a chance and go overseas and put himself in an uncomfortable position and then got injured immediately. And was obviously going to be a player in England and then did an ACL, came back, did an ACL, and he's still, you know, scoring 10, 11 and should have scored probably 15 to 18 goals this year.
Yeah. Your comment about the hold up play is a good one. I think I always like smart soccer players, and knowing when to run forward and knowing when to check back, I think that's another area of concern they need to get better at.
One of the last ones from me, Coach, is this. For you yourself personally, we touched a little bit on it yesterday too. I'm going to say you've won a lot. You've won a lot. Like, and you said sometimes when you win, you can become complacent. And I know you're guarding against that for yourself individually. But when you look ahead to like the 2024 season, what are the specific challenges about it that actually gets you excited? Is it rebuilding a team that Nico is not the centerpiece? Because now he's not there anymore. You know, it's not a case of he might come for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. There's no more Nico Ladero. Maybe the best player in club history. He's gone. Under your watch, you're going into a new season. It's a big call by the club. So are those the kinds of things that motivate you, kind of proving again? Or what still keeps you ticking at this point?
I think the hatred of losing. Hate losing. I mean, we want to start off again on a positive note. Yeah. I think we're going to have that.
Yeah. You have a whole preseason now, right?
I say that a little tongue-in-cheek. It's not excitement. It's just different without Nico because he's been involved in so much. So it's new. But I don't think excitement's the right word. I think, look, every preseason, players, coaches, fans... Everybody has that, you know, little bit of excitement and they're, you know, oh my God, what are we going to do? And how's the team going to do? And what does it look like? And who are the new players we're bringing in? And all of these things. So you have that natural bit of excitement all the time. But it's just, I think the drive to be successful, that's within myself, that's within Brecky, Freddie, Tommy, Andy, trickles down to all the players. I think the expectation inside of that locker room, I think those have been firmly established. And that's what year in and year out drives consistent performances is just having that standard. And look, guys have come and raised the standard, started the standards, you know, Keller coming here and in, you know, his prime. We had Freddie Ljungberg, and we've had a lot of big players at the club. And so we're a big club, and we're a winning club. And the fans demand it, and front office demands it, and the coaches demand it, and the players demand it amongst themselves. And that's the key driver for me. There's a lot of history. And I'm looking up at the whiteboard here, born in 74.
Yeah.
Look, Seattle's always kind of a winning sports town, you know, ever since I've been here.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think the Mariners may disagree for 20 years, but other than that.
If you're a Mariner fan, though, you're pissed all the time because they don't win, right?
That's
last year was great. Yeah. Everybody jumped on the bandwagon. I was going to say, Keely, that, look, I skipped high school when the Sonics won the championship.
Yeah.
I skipped school and went down to downtown and goofed around with all my friends. And, you know.
I was just being snarky. Go Seattle.
No, but. Huskies, Seahawks. Well, football might be in our town. Football might be, you know, everybody's going to watch the Seahawks. Everybody loves the Huskies.
Yeah.
But you got to win. Yeah. You got to win to be relevant. I think there's that subtle pressure for me coming from a perspective of being born and raised in Seattle. But I just believe that the history, what we've accomplished, what we started. What we've had, you know, and it goes through the generations. I mean, the 80s, we don't talk about it anymore. It's ancient history. But, you know, when the team went away in 83 and then it got reborn again in 94 and it was just a bunch of local guys, Chance Fry, Ernie James, myself, Billy Crook, Neil Megson, you know, Allen, everybody. We took pride in being the Seattle Sounders. Took a lot of pride in that. And then the USL team came. Guys like Danny Jackson, you know, Roger, Taylor,
Zach.
We all...
Layton.
Yeah. Well, he was more of a mercenary, but, you know, whatever. But he loved playing for us. He loved playing for us. Preston Burpo, they were all good pros, good people. Ryan Edwards,
Marcus,
we loved playing for our hometown team, and that morphed right into when I took over the USL team, and we had more local guys come through, and you know, me and Tommy, and you know. Chuck Grenade and, you know, all the other coaches, Dickey for a while and, you know, everybody. It was all pride. Pride in this club. 2009 when you guys started. I could feel it.
Hearing you talking, I'm gonna say this. This is from me. When I came to Seattle, it was Taylor Graham, Roger Levesque, Zach Scott. Danny Jackson was there in that preseason as well. Sakuda. But they made me realize, one, what it was to be a pro, and two, what being in Seattle was. Then we had a game against Portland. We played them 2 years in a row, back-to-back Open Cup games. And Ziggy always gave the team talk after the team meal the night before the game. On this game against Portland, in Portland, you gave the talk. And you won't remember it, but it's a speech till this day I remember. And I've shared it with the kids I coach as well. Because I was not in the lineup. I was not playing with some rotation. But then and there, like, ready to run for a war. Yeah. Because it was like, this is what it means to be a Sounders. Now, I asked her, because I'm going to ask this. I just named a bunch of guys. Then you go from there. Then, you know, Brad became the captain. I felt that from him. I felt that from Ozzy in the way he plays sometimes. Casey for sure had it. When you look in your locker room now, who are the guys still transmitting that message that being on the Sounders is, it means this?
Starts with Stephen Fry.
That's the first name I was going to name, yeah.
Starts with Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
Goes through, you know, JP, you know, Christian, Jordan. They all have different ways of expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. But we still have those players, you know, that have pride in what they do. And I don't think, again... I don't think that coaches or I or whoever coaches the team will have a hard time sorting out who really wants to be here and who doesn't. Mm. I just think it just comes natural. We know if the guy doesn't want to be here, then the next, out. You don't want to, you don't want to win? Out, go, there you go. There's too many players that have come through this franchise that all have the one inherent gift, quality. You could call it by any manner of different names. I mean, Boys in the Boat is coming out as a movie, right? Yeah. That's one of my favorite books because it's about the Pacific Northwest and grit and all that. But it could be, you know, you're a winner you wanted to be here and you enjoyed your time here and Clint had something to prove and Roman finished his career, Nico finished his career. I mean, his the tears in his goodbye speech. I mean, you could tell guys like that just they love this club.
I mean, I think that's a good place. I had more questions, but should we end there?
I know. I kind of feel like my producer brain is saying
no, it's good.
Perfect. We're going to leave
appreciate,
it there.
Yeah, we appreciate
no notes, the
time,
guys. That's great.
We'll do this again in a few months for to preview the next season, for preseason. I'm looking forward to it. I will get your thoughts on this. Where we're sitting here is the new facility, of course. How much, real quickly, will this make an impact? Because, I mean, you've been working out of Starfire, which when I came in the league was the premier place. I couldn't believe it. And then as the years have gone by, it's dropped in rankings. And now you're probably up to one of the top places again.
Yeah, this will be one of the top places in the country because I'm privy to some of the future expansion and plans and the club just moving in such a massive positive direction with all of the stuff that we're doing at our level in MLS, plus the World Cup coming and all of those things that are happening here in the Northwest. It's a massive building. I get lost. There's so much room, so much space, so much opportunity. The grass fields look great. The turf field looks great. The one thing, though, if we're talking facilities, one thing I said the other day, and I mean this, I want everyone to feel some of the same things we felt at Starfire, though, because, look, I appreciate, look, even the superstars, you know, Raul and Nico and over the years, Oba, Clint, everybody, we all signed autographs on the way out on a on a Saturday afternoon with the kids at Starfire. I thought that was part of, you know, embedding ourselves into the community. I hope that we don't become sterile and we're too big of a club. I still want us to have that down-to-earth feel where people feel welcome when they come here. I don't care who watches my trainings. I mean, you guys can come down and watch trainings. I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, it's I just want that to feel like people can still be welcome here and we don't lose track of that.
That's a great show. Great show. And we'll end right there. As always, Schmetz, thank you. Thank you. Enjoy your off-season, whatever plans they may entail. And then, yeah, we'll be back in a few months to preview next season.
Let's do it.